This episode of Section D was first broadcast on Tuesday the 19th of June on Monocle 24. Section D is brought to you in association with Lexis. Hello and welcome to Section D, the weekly design hour here on Monocle 24 with me, Hugo MacDonald. This week we've a bit of a fair frenzy. We scooted our way from Design Miami at Basel to Neocon in Chicago and back to DMY in Berlin. A different fair for a different crowd in a different city. Let's crack on. Coming up, we take in the stands at Design Miami in Basel and discovered a host of interesting material experiments.
I've got some other items to blow yourself around in circles. I've got hair dryers, I've got a fan, and I've got these balloon dresses.
We dropped in on Neocon in Chicago to see what's dressing up the contract market in the United States.
If you're in a knowledge-based economy, it's about how people work together. The furnishings can play a role in that.
And in Berlin, we headed to the former Tempelhof Airport to take in the latest from the German fields of architecture, design, and fashion.
We have Imaginative Playground, an architect from New York who has blue boxes and children can build their own playground with modules.
Elsewhere, we speak to Patrizia Moroso, CEO of the eponymous Italian furniture company, and we discuss how superbrands are increasingly incorporating design into their growth strategy. That's with Brad Jakeman, president of Global Beverages. All that to come over the next hour here on Section D. Every year in June, lovers of unique objects descend on Basel to see and buy not only art from Art Basel, now in its 43rd edition, but also design objects from Design Miami Basel. The design fair started in Miami at the same time as Art Basel Miami Beach in 2005, and it's been holding its reverse satellite fair in Basel since 2006. This year, 35 commercial galleries and a scad of satellite projects were on show. From Basel, Berlin correspondent Kimberly Bradley explored this year's edition of the fair.
Right now, the Fairground Square in Basel, Switzerland is a massive construction site. Next to a half-finished building by hometown architects Herzig and Demeron, there's a gaping hole in the ground and a lot of noise. But the din isn't stopping crowds from visiting Art Basel or its sister fair, Design Miami Basel, which is a showcase of 20th and 21st century design. This year's edition is the second in Basel under director Mariana Göbel and has a few extra surprises from eras past, especially 1960s and 70s French design. Benjamin Ball, a designer from Los Angeles, reacts.
I'm very curious to see a number of historical characters surfacing, Jean Prouvaire especially, as well as Rudolf Steiner. This was work that I didn't expect to see at a more commercial fair.
Near the Design Miami Basel entrance, just behind Art Basel's Art Unlimited section, Paris gallery Patrick Seguin is exhibiting an entire house by Jean Prouvaire. The Metropole Aluminum House is one of only two surviving examples of a prefabricated school that Prouvaire designed in 1949. But lots of unique new works are on view and for sale, too. Salon 94, which is known more as a fine arts gallery from New York, is showing sleek, weighty furniture by fashion designer Rick Owens, alongside objects by ceramic artist Betty Woodman. Salon 94 design curator Rudy Weissenberg explains Owens' approach to his pieces.
I always say it's like this post-apocalyptic dream of punk and Courvoisier and lines and brutalist and bunker. And so what we have here, it's sort of his interpretation of things that he loves and things that he needs, because just like his clothes, he believes that things are meant to be used. And again, just the correlation with the clothes, things can seem very angular and linear, and yet once you sit in them, sleep on them, or use them, they're very comfortable.
Owens's bookshelves and seating come in materials ranging from plywood to alabaster and Thassos marble, even ox bones, petrified bark, and stag horns, all fabricated by artisans in Paris. Woodman, on the other hand, displays splashy ceramics.
So Betty Woodman is an American ceramicist that lives between New York and, well, the U.S. and Italy, and she's still at 82 years old, throwing her own ceramics and pottery. We have a very special piece that was in her retrospective in the Metropolitan Museum of Art from 2005. I don't know if you know this, but as you walk into the Metropolitan Museum of Art, there's a patron that paid for the flowers. And so what Betty did for her show, she took out the urns that they have in those niches, and she created this massive planters for the spaces. I believe there's 5 spaces, and we have one of them here, right in the center of the booth.
Salon 94's booth isn't the only one to blur boundaries between disciplines. Cologne-based gallery Gabriella Ammann also crosses lines with pieces like a monumental table by Ron Arid, or plexiglass coffee tables that contain 1 square meter of Chinese earth by artists Bo Young-young and Emmanuel Wolfs. Ammann is happy to be here, both aesthetically and economically.
Since many years, and also since I started my gallery 7 years ago, also I participated at that year, the first time, Design Miami. We found out that the collectors who collect contemporary art, they also collect contemporary design. And also architecture, design and art very often merge together. So it's very logical to show here, and we have a wonderful crowd here in Basel because it's really the best collectors of the world, I would say. This year especially, a lot of American collectors came back, which is maybe also due to the better course now with the euro, obviously. Yeah, we appreciate this fair a lot because it helps us to continue our business and to find new collectors and clients internationally.
Design Miami Basel also has an event program including panel discussions with designers like Arid or Jürgen Bay, plus edgy projects that promote young talent. Fendi, the fashion house, commissioned young design duo Studio Forma Fantasma to create an unrestricted project with leather discarded from its fashion productions. Then there's the quirky work of Tom Foolsham, one of the 3 winners of the W Hotels Designer of the Future Award. His project includes a whimsical piece that looks like a spinning seesaw.
This is a balancing piece I've made. It's all balancing in the center on a steel, sharpened steel tip. And one person sits on either side, similar to a seesaw. But rather than going up and down, you turn your head sideways, and the power of your breath is enough to spin you around in circles. It was an experiment, a test to see if that was possible. So I was kind of making it, trying to work out how it could happen. And there's some videos here of the first test as we just sat on it, in this rickety bits of mild steel, just trying to propel ourselves around. Going real light in the head, kind of hyperventilating, going all giddy.
Foolsham has some innovative solutions to the breathing problem.
So people don't have to blow themselves around and fall off. I've got some other items to blow yourself around in circles. I've got hair dryers, I've got a fan, and I've got these balloon dresses. So you pump up the balloon dresses, you either blow them or use the pump, and open the valve on the side, and as the pneumatic dress deflates, you're spun around in circles by the power of the stored energy in them.
Design Miami Basel feels calmer than the frenzied art fair, but there's still plenty going on. Social events have included parties on boats on the Rhine and field trips to the Vitry Museum just over the Swiss-German border. Sales have been solid and the fair well-received, even if some visitors, like Ball, point out that there's more to the design universe than what we see here.
This is a kind of a slice through the marketplace, a high-end marketplace of design. It's quite interesting. The low-end of design is not represented at all. Like, where's the Target booth?
Designer Noé Duchaufour-Laurence, who is at Design Miami Basel for the first time showing new high-tech objects, had a more philosophical view on what it all means.
At the end, we need objects. Not because we need a chair or table, because I think we have almost everything we need. But we really need emotions. You need something around you because you have to create your own world. And to express something about you and your environment and what you want to show and becomes a very subtle thing. So object acting a little bit, like a piece of art in a way.
From Monaco in Basel, I'm Kimberly Bradley.
That was our Berlin correspondent whizzing round the stands at Design Miami in Basel. One trend that stuck out for her was that of younger crossover designers experimenting with materials. They took high-tech materials and used them in an organic way. And Kimberly spoke to a few of this movement's more interesting protagonists.
This year, Design Miami Basel has more than its share of old-school, high-end, mid-century design on offer. But at the newer school of designers at the fair, an interesting pattern emerged. It's all about being back to nature, using old materials in new ways, or new materials to evoke the elemental. Eindhoven-based Studio Forma Fantasma, whose Design Miami project was sponsored by Fendi, was all about leather.
So my name is Simone Farresin, and together with Andrea Trimarchi, we are Studio Forma Fantasma. We are both Italian, but we live and work in the Netherlands. And now we are at Design Basel, at the booth of Craftica. It is our new project that has been promoted and wanted by Fendi, the fashion house. Craftica is an installation with a big variety of pieces. Fendi asked us to incorporate their leather in the project, and they asked us to reinterpret the concept of leather. So all the pieces are homaging leather on different levels.
Studio Forma Fantasma put their own ideas of leftovers to use too, by using types of fish not normally used in leather. Their leather-covered stools, a room divider, table, fish leather spoons with seashell cups, drawings on goatskin, and glass lamps hanging by belt-like straps are individual elements in a holistic installation.
While the collections of pieces that you see here are more about skins and kind of leathers that come from discarded from the food industry. So if you see us in the stools and in the spoons, the leather we used are all really common fishes that are usually considered not so precious, and they are not so much used in the leather industry. So we have perch leather, salmon leather, wolf fish leather. So the link between the pieces, I think it's really about food industry and leather, because if you see that container, for instance, an animal bladder. So it's not a kind of skin, but it has the ability to hold liquids. So it's really, all the project is really an homage to leather. You know, each piece of the collection is highlighting different qualities of leather, and then we pair it with different materials that could highlight, you know, the texture or the tactility of leather.
Had Studio Forma Fantasma ever designed with leather before?
We never thought about it. Like, well, you know, of course you wear leather, but we never use leather in our design. So it was really an interesting investigation. And then through also the knowledge of Fendi and the meeting with the craftsmen, it was really a nice experience to investigate a really complex process, you know, of working with a material that needs to be treated with certain respect.
Over at Studio 94's booth, design consultant Rudy Weissenberg explains how fashion star Rick Owens added furniture to his design practice, along with Owens' use of what could be called unorthodox materials.
Just to contextualize, Rick, when he moved to Paris to start his line, they moved into this enormous space, the old headquarters of the Communist Party. And so it was a little shishi parts of it, the other parts of it were very crazy 70s mirrored. And he sort of really took everything out, and it was very raw. It was a lot of cement. And he realized that, A, he couldn't afford the furniture that he liked, and B, that he had this idea how he wanted to live. We have bookshelves that are made out of boxes. It's all these different pieces that you can get and incorporate into a space in very different formations. So they're either wood, and again, it's the high-low that he likes to use. It's plywood. It's stained plywood. It's very raw. And then one of them is alabaster, which is a beautiful, sensual material that is hard to get, that it's quite fragile, even though it looks very hard. It's difficult to manipulate because it can break easily. But once it's set and when it's made into the furniture, it's quite resistant. He also has one of his pieces that are best known is the curial chair, and you really feel like a Ra, a king, sitting on it. The one we have here is made out of petrified bark, not really wood. Petrified bark, wood right now, the wood has become really popular, and you see the trunks that people are selling. But you can't really cut through it or make forms out of it because it's almost impossible to cut. So Rick and his wife Michelle found this loot, this stash of the bark, the actual bark, outside of Paris. And there's a very small amount of it that they found, and they're able to create these pieces of furniture. And I would say that's probably the most luxurious and rare out of all of them. He also works with bone. Where they were making the chair next to it, there was a butcher shop. And they said, you know what, we love the bone. I'm going to go buy bone, cure it, and make chairs out of it. So we have one of those. And I find it beautiful.
Also based in Paris is Noé Duchaufour-Laurence, whose work is much higher tech, but still based on nature. On view at Galerie Beatrice Saint-Laurent's booth, his objects look like stylized branches with surfaces that glimmer like leaves in the sun.
The shapes of those lights are made of branches, and they are kind of shells, and the shells are the background you can see between branches in the trees. So it's inspired by that. It's creating a kind of organic shapes. And inside of those shells, you have mirror systems and LED with a movement which is inspired by the movement of the leaves in the tree with the wind. And the light is coming through the leaves, and that's really the impression we have in each object, because at the end the light is projected against a surface in perspex. So every shell is made of resin and fiberglass, and then the structure is made of metal and molded parts.
The designer describes how his visual language connects to the environment.
This language is made of shapes, of curves, and the material is really there to be at the service of the shape and the function. So the connection between all of this is recreating a kind of landscape, but it's an interior landscape. When I'm making interior design, it's a universe which is very intimate. The object is a prolongation of this landscape, so a language which becomes kind of landscape in your house or in a restaurant or whatever. So it's a really recreating our landscape with our knowledge and the knowledge of the technicity and the academic background we have, etc. So that's my way to express, to create this link between the nature, which is universal, and which is something that we can't hide and we have to accept, and our personal interiors universe by the object.
That was our Berlin correspondent Kimberly Bradley there in Basel for Design Miami. And we'll be heading to Berlin next, after this.
You're listening to Section D on Monocle 24, our weekly program on the best in design, architecture, graphics, and fashion. Section D is brought to you by Lexus. Lexus, creating a new chapter in amazing design, technology, and driving.
Premiering on Monocle.com, a film about the city we feel ranks number one for quality of life. Monocle's annual survey goes beyond the basic economic and social aspects of a city, identifying often overlooked factors that can bring happiness and ease to everyday life. And for the second time running, climbing back up to the number one spot, it's Zurich.
On a sunny early summer's day in Zurich, a handful of its residents have made their way to Bade Enge, one of several bathing houses situated along the waterfront, offering decks for sunbathing, bars, and even saunas. The scene is especially notable for taking place minutes from downtown, and it's what sets Zurich immediately apart. This is a city with abundant and interconnected green space, cut through by rivers leading to its lake, all of it set up to be enjoyed by the population.
You can watch this film, plus our top 25 most livable city countdown, on monocle.com.
Welcome back to Section D. Celebrating its 10th anniversary this year, the DMY International Design Festival at Berlin has grown from its humble beginnings to a vibrant global showcase that celebrates design in objects, fashion and architecture. Melanie Shevchenko visited the festival in the capital's former airport, Berlin Tempelhof. Across 20,000 square metres, it featured work by professional designers, studios and institutions, as well as younger talents and design schools. Here's what Melanie found.
Design is about change. It's about improving the environment we live in. And as the exhibitors and workshops at the DMY International Design Festival Berlin showed us, the potential of design to define the way we live, or the way we want to live, is indeed thriving. With designers from over 30 nations, DMY is a feast for the eyes that challenges one's perception of design as something that merely makes things look good. This edition's symposium, Designing Business, also took that notion to heart.
It's more about design thinking than just designing in the sense of building a successful business, but building things that improve our lives and influence and have an impact about social issues.
Karen Karana is the editor-in-chief of the DMY catalog. She mentioned some current trends in design that are rippling through the rows of the exhibition.
One trend, of course, is still sustainability. A lot of designers are also thinking outside of the box, not just in the sense of making objects, but also designing processes. That's also a theme that a lot of objects have this year.
Many of these objects are also quite playful, too. Like robots that are navigated by plants, an egg beater which has been converted into a lamp, and a new technique called arm knitting, which anyone can learn by using leftover fabric scraps to create seat covers and throw pillows.
And we have a lot of objects that also create social places, like a mobile kitchen that invites visitors to cook together and create another outdoor kitchen place and dinner there. And also we have imaginative playground, an architect from New York who has blue boxes, and children can build their own playground with modules. And so the designers also think more about social places and creating them and creating tools to build your own environment and change it.
Designing processes is definitely a widespread theme at DMY. Connecting Concepts is a traveling exhibition that illuminates Dutch design, from wardrobes to bicycles to apartment complexes. The collection is produced by the Netherlands Institute for Design and Fashion. Els van der Plas from the Institute explains the Dutch process.
The idea is to show how you come to a product, or even how you come to a commission to a product. So it shows the process in design. And the idea is also to link processes more than products. So the process is the link.
Taking processes in a different direction was the Maker Lab, a Berlin-based nomadic learning environment and self-titled process incubator that is open to everyone. Basically, Maker Lab sets up workshops at various events to openly discuss processes through example. At DMY, the Maker Lab tied design to human rights. Jay Cousins, a Maker Lab organizer, talks about their approach.
Within the context of human rights, we were invited by the funders of the Human Rights Logo Project, and they crowdsourced a logo for human rights. We prefer to call it an icon or a symbol. And they were looking for ways in which this could go viral, or ways in which the logo could be promoted and taken up on a more widespread level. And my feeling on it was that what we needed to do actually was to identify for ourselves what our relationship was with human rights and to create the opportunity for people to adopt the logo.
The Maker Lab station is made up of long work tables with hands-on tools, such as drawing materials and sewing machines, mixed with video and audio recording equipment.
So as well as like creating opportunities for people to replicate it, we're also creating opportunities for people to change it or shape it or also add meaning to it, and to add meaning to our relationship with human rights, and look at how design influences our relationship with human rights.
For the 2012 edition of DMY, the country of focus was China, with an exhibition called China New Design, Revisit and Reflect, which highlights the best of Chinese contemporary design and provides insight into the origins and future of Chinese design.
We have 189 design works, and we have 109 daily objects, which you can see there. Okay. They are from the normal China markets. That they are the majority of Chinese people using.
Project manager Yaya Wu explains the exhibition's balance between selected objects that are contemporary designs and the mock Chinese market that has been restructured on the ground of the exhibition space, which is riddled with plastic souvenirs.
This exhibition is all about comparing and revisiting and reviewing. It's the modern and the traditional way of life. But this time, we want to create a whole environment of what is modern and what is the pioneering thing in China and what is still widely existing in the real world.
Artfully designed rice shadows spill out on the ground surrounding the contemporary objects. Yaya explains that these objects, mostly furniture, take an aspect of daily life in China and reappropriate it in the design. An armchair, for example, is constructed using the same aesthetic as a tool used for cleaning a Chinese wok. Yaya walks me over to the market to show me her favorite design, a pair of underwear fashioned with a zipper pocket for carrying cash.
My parents and that their generation have been using this kind of thing for years. When they're traveling, they always carry cash and they put their cash in the underpants with a zip. So this is something we want to introduce to the world, the wisdom and the humor in the daily life.
In every direction, DMY offers something special for the senses. One of the wildest was the musical ensemble designed by White Elephant, a studio in Graz, Austria, as part of Vienna Design Week. The installation is made up of several Austrian-designed objects, and each object is struck by a small wooden ball on a timed system. The result is a musical piece that runs in a loop. Visitors can also play the individual objects by hitting the notes on a small keyboard, as each key is rigged to a specific object. The 5 days of the International Design Festival Berlin is enough to get anybody excited about creating, especially for the newbies starting out in the industry. Joanna Ostrowska, an industrial design student at the Strzemiński Academy of Fine Arts in Poland, is attending DMY with her set of children's playing blocks called Tricot Bricks.
You can come here and see what designers do, what other schools do, see how it looks. And you know, the most important thing is to talk to usual people and see their reaction, if they are interested, if they like it. What do they think about design at all? I'm thinking all the time about the function, how it works, and for who do I design.
So it seems at DMY Berlin, where ingenuity runs rampant, there's an object designed for everyone.
That was Melanie Shevchenko in Berlin at the DMY Design Festival. And this is from my latest musical crush, Becky Jones from Stockton-on-Tees in Northern England. She goes by the name of Saint Saviour. And this is The Rain Falls on the Just.
The rain falls on the just, and the unjust just the same. The rain falls on the just, and the unjust just the same.
That was Saint Saviour with The Rain Falls on the Just. You're listening to Section D. Chicago is perhaps better known for its architecture than its design. But every June, the largest design showcase in North America takes over the city's sprawling Art Deco landmark, the Merchandise Mart. For 3 days, tens of thousands of architects, designers, developers and buyers from around the world descend on the Windy City to test hundreds of new commercial interior products. With the economic downturn, the conference has shrunk in recent years. But this year's lively, colourful event marked a comeback, as our Chicago reporter, David Lepesca, discovered.
Merchandise Mart is next. Doors open on the right at Merchandise Mart.
A steady stream of commuters emerges from Chicago's L train and hustles into the Merchandise Mart, a broad-shouldered brick behemoth overlooking the Chicago River that was the largest building in the world when it opened in 1930. It has been home to NeoCon, or the National Exposition of Contract Furnishings, since the event debuted in 1969. Shortly after longtime Chicago Mayor Richard M. Daley finishes his opening address, the hallways bustle as hordes of attendees rush to find the hottest new products. They stop in eye-catching showrooms, test the latest chairs and tables, and listen to smooth pitch men like Scott Lane, Senior Vice President of Marketing at New York-based design firm HumanScale. Here, he describes the Diffriant Smart Chair, a new one-size-fits-all desk chair from Niels Diffriant, the grandfather of ergonomic seating and designer of the 2010 Red Dot Award-winning Diffriant World Chair, which should appear in European markets this summer.
Niels always loves to say, like, what's his greatest chair? It's his next one. So here we have a brand new chair with an entire new form factor across the back. Everything about this chair is engineered to make sure that the end user can sit in this chair without having to make any adjustments. There are so many chairs on the marketplace that require you to twist knobs and adjust buttons and slide things around. We've got this fantastic form-fitting mesh that ensures that no matter what weight you are, that the lumbar support is immediately built in. Someone who's 250 pounds can sit just as comfortably in the exact same chair as somebody who's 110 pounds.
Some exhibitors use gimmicks to draw the crowds. At the showroom of the Mohawk Group, the mute and anonymous New York performance artists The Bumbies attempt to read visitors' minds via typewriter. The two-year-old firm Whitey Board, which makes erasable, reusable post-it notes, has dispatched Archie the Robot as its gift-bearing emissary. Seen over and over at this year's event are visions of the next generation office. As workers increasingly tap away at digital devices late into the night, their workspace needs to be a place of comfort and adaptation, more living room than corporate cubicle. The Hosu chair from Coalesce is large enough for sprawling and has side pockets for magazines and tablet computers. Toboggan, the new chair from Antenna Design, has a backrest that doubles as a desk when the sitter faces the opposite direction. Hayworth's indoor stone fire pit and the waterfalls of Blue World USA offer homely comforts at work. Yet it's the lowly stool that may come to define the office of the future. Long dismissed as the runt of office seating, the stout, simple stool has carved out a niche within high-flying tech firms. Colorful new stools of all shapes and sizes are everywhere at this year's NeoCon. Most, including Best of NeoCon award winners from Herman Miller and Davis Furniture, would fit right in at Facebook headquarters or the Googleplex. Mark Sherman, Herman Miller's Director of Corporate Communications, says stools foster the sort of organic collaboration that sparks innovation, the very foundation of the knowledge economy.
That really speaks to, again, the way that people are increasingly working, because it's so much more about these quick collaborations. You still need to have places where people can sit for extended periods of time, really get intimate with a keyboard and do some heads-down work. But so much of what we see today, organizations are leaner, they're flatter, they're much more based on the idea generation than they are the old sort of institutional mindset of production. And so if you're in a knowledge-based economy, it's about how people work together. The furnishings can play a role in that, in helping people have those happenstance meetings and those very quick and casual conversations.
Sitting on accordion-like stools outside the Heller showroom, new acquaintances Virginia Hyatt and Ellen Martin strike up a casual chat of their own. Martin runs the Martin Retail Group of Birmingham, Alabama, and attended her first NeoCon in 1979. she feels the conference has come back nearly all the way from the recession. Hyatt, a neocon first-timer, is the purchasing director for a major Southern California school district. She's preparing to spend millions of dollars to refurnish schools and administrative offices and has seen a lot to like.
I booked myself in a lot of conferences and seminars because I didn't think I'd spend so much time in the showrooms, and I wish I would have left a lot more time for the showrooms because the color and the vibrancy and the energy and the creativity, it's just overwhelming almost. The trend is definitely there for flexibility, different height furniture, being able to reduce it, lower it. Movement, lots of movement. You want to move, you fidget all the time. And our offices and classrooms are so rigid, and we really need to change the trend and get into more of this movement here.
Anything that you're definitely going to be getting?
I'm still working the reps against each other, the pricing, so.
Hyatt touched on what may be the most ubiquitous trend of this year's NeoCon. It's right there in the bright red stool she's sitting on, in the avocado greens over at Safeco, in the canary yellow of the Hosu chair, and in showrooms on every floor. In an industry long dominated by dark browns and gunmetal gray, Buck Schley, director of marketing at Innovant, sees signs of optimism.
Lots of bright colors. It's a good indicator. You know, things got drab there for a while. The industry slowed down. The colors got quiet. Now it's starting to pop again. Everybody's optimistic, you know? I think the whole industry's coming back, and happier days are here again.
At NeoCon, the happiest times start around 3 p.m., when exhibitors trot out smartly dressed bartenders and freshly prepared canapes, and showrooms transform into open bars. Deals are cemented with a handshake, industry gossip is shared, and toasts envision another banner year.
Yes, thank you very much.
Peter Brandinger, Vice President of Business Development for Configura, a design software firm based in Sweden, has been coming to NeoCon for years, and not only to find new clients.
It's always interesting for us to see what's going on in the industry. I mean, we meet all these people here. I mean, this is everybody comes here one way or the other, so it's a great place to be.
That was our man in Chicago, David Lepeska, reporting from the NeoCon Trade Fair. We're off to New York after this.
You're listening to Section D on Monocle 24, our weekly program on the best in design, architecture, graphics, and fashion. Section D is brought to you by Lexus. Lexus, creating a new chapter in amazing design, technology, and driving.
From São Paulo to Sapporo, from Brooklyn to Buenos Aires, with a samba, bossa, jazz, poppier, rock and roller, frankly far superior station, to discover the newest and finest sounds. This is the sound of Monocle spinning its musical globe. Check in with our editors turned DJs as they whisk you through the time zones as we take you continental, Atlantic and Pacific. Round the clock, round the block, music on Monocle 24.
Welcome back. For nearly a decade, Italian furniture company Moroso has been working on projects with contemporary artists around the world. Now formalised into the annual Moroso Award for Contemporary Art, the company sponsors three Italian artists to install pieces in New York, London and Milan. Ranging from illustration to performance art, New York's event was held in February during the Armory Show. Milan will host its event this month, and in October, the final Italian artist will show in London during the Frieze Art Fair. Our New York bureau chief, Aisha Spears, met with Patrizia Moroso whilst in New York to find out more about the award.
We just started 1 year ago. This is the second year. And so it's something very new. But we are not new in the collaboration with artists. We started making an important thing in 2003 in Milano with a Chinese artist. His name is Michael Lin. Now he's really very famous around the world. But that moment was just famous in Taiwan, that is his country, but not a lot around the world. And we have have done beautiful work in our showroom in Milano during the Salone to show and to make something that for me is important. So to make a good relation, a positive relation, interacting relation between design and art, and to show that it's possible to have communication. The people making design or people making art sometimes are very close. They are creative, they are inspiring by sometimes the same kind of things. But in the end, the artist is happy to make something so strong as is possible. And the function is not a real function, it's a brain function or a concept that is much more, or is more so much important, but is not the functionality of an object. Mm-hmm. For a designer that is maybe inventing something, is also the creative part is the same, but in the end he wants to make an object with a function. And the two things have a lot in common, I think.
Yeah.
Just the result is a bit different. But I think that the two words have to talk together a lot to make something more interesting and something new.
Mm. And so let's talk about the relationship between, we talked about design and art, now the relationship between young artists, young designers, and Moroso. You're clearly supporting and championing these young artists with this. Mm. How important is that to you in bringing young talent to the world through your brand?
Mm-hmm. But for me, it's a big, big, big satisfaction, of course. And for them, is a little help, because in Italy we have not such a public contribution for art, unfortunately, in this time, in this moment. We hope to change possibly soon, but the country is in a very particular moment. So, unfortunately, for art, art is the last thing to think about, and we have some big problems before. So I think that is so important not to let the young artists without spaces and experience that, for me, it's important, it's not such a thing, it's a little a word, but it's helping some of them to become more important out of Italy. And that is really important, because the big art market, in the end, because they have to survive with the market, is out, is especially in countries like here, United States, or, the big markets are out of Italy for art, especially. So we think that if they have the possibility to show their work to more people as possible, and during the art fairs around, so for instance, New York is during Armory and London is during Frieze, that is a good possibility for them to be known by someone else out of Italy. Yes.
Okay, so about the award. So New York is the first, because the winners usually are announced around January, so March, of course, is the first. And after, we will have in June the Milano exhibition. This year, the Milano winner is a girl. She came from Croatia, but she's now living in Italy like many other people that was born there and moved during the war. So she's Italian. She was studying in Milano at the Academy of Brera, and she's a performer. She's so strong, she's so tough. Marina Abramović is coming from that country, and she's the strongest and most beautiful woman in the world for me. I love her a lot. And Dragana is a young girl, but she's tough, really strong. And in October will be the turn, during Frieze, of Loris Cecchini. Loris is he's from Tuscany. He's an incredible, fantastic artist. He's not so young like the first two, but yeah. He's anyway around less than 40. And
he is one of my favorite Italian artists. And he will do something in our showroom in London during freeze, like I would say.
That was our New York Bureau Chief, Aisha Spears, in New York with Patrizia Moroso. And rounding off our show, it's back to Midori House in London. PepsiCo has just announced the appointment of a new role within the company, Chief Design Officer. The new appointment is Mauro Porcini, who's joined from the same role he held at 3M. His mission is to bring design thinking to the company's organisation and approach, and it's the latest in a growing surge of multinationals taking design into their growth and performance strategy. I spoke to Brad Jakeman, president of Global Beverages, the umbrella company which owns PepsiCo, about this new direction.
The decision for us to appoint a chief design officer came after the announcements that we took back in April, where we announced that we were going to reinvest between $500 and $600 million in building our kind of top 12 global powerhouse brands. And as we look at what that investment involves, it involves everything from obviously more marketing money, but it also involves different organizations. And we built a global organization in New York to manage our global beverage brands that I'm responsible for on a global basis. And now we're really kind of building that out to include all of the critical capabilities that we need in marketing to today's consumer, and design is a critical component of that. We felt very strongly that we have always had a legacy in great design, principally through Pepsi, but really with the appointment of Mauro, we're really building that out
and trying to achieve a greater level of that. Consistency amongst these key brands, like you mentioned, is that right?
Yeah, consistency is one element, but I think the bigger and higher order is imaginative engagement with the consumer. While we obviously seek to have our global brands presented in the same way or in similar ways to consumers, and that's the consistency part, really what Mauro's appointment represents is a significant focus on making much more imaginative and engaging connections with consumers.
Are you sort of pioneering this movement in the food and beverage industry, do you think, with the appointment of a chief design officer?
I think we're one of the first companies within our category to do that. I'm not sure that we're the first. But Pepsi has, as a brand, which is our largest brand, I mean, we say at PepsiCo that PepsiCo is only ever two letters away from Pepsi. It's our largest global brand. It has, because of its intrinsic and inherent connection to pop culture, has been a brand that has always been connected to design through that kind of very legitimate kind of DNA of participating and shaping pop culture, of which design is also a critical driver. So the brand has inherently got those kind of design DNA strands within it. And I think in many respects, there's very few food and beverage brands that have the same level of kind of connectedness to pop culture as Pepsi has. So it makes perfect sense for us now to kind of codify that, if you like, into an organization and a design strategy for the brands.
Very interesting. Well, it sounds like a wonderful opportunity for Mauro Porcini. And presumably he will be building a team when he starts. Is that right?
Yes, so Mauro starts in a couple of weeks, and one of the things that he and I have been talking a lot about is where is his focus going to be? Like, what are the first things that he is going to be working on? And in a company like PepsiCo, there are no shortage of kind of big and exciting projects to be working on and programs to be managing, but his first focus is really going to be building out the design capability at PepsiCo, figuring out what the right kind of ecosystem is between internal designers, external agencies, advisors, and so on and so forth. So that's going to be his principal focus, I would imagine, over the next couple of months.
That was Brad Jakeman, president of Global Beverages there. And that brings us to the end of this week's Section D. Next week, we'll be talking city design and architecture in Zurich, the number one city in our annual quality of life survey. We'll talk Greening Milan with architect Stefano Boeri, Cultural Olympics with Vicky Richardson from the British Council, and a new drive-through airport concept with architect Miklos Derry. So be sure to tune in for all of that. This week's show was produced by Gillian DeBias and edited by James Bacon. Playing you out, it's another track from Saint Saviour. This is Dreamtime. I'm Hugo MacDonald. Thank you for listening.